development as in written apologies that I have received. For the team that is present here from Treasury, just introduction, my name is Charles De Beer, I'm chairperson of the Select Committee on Finance, and each member can just introduce themselves and officials present.
My name is Edwin Chani, I'm the member of this committee.
Parliamentary liaison, SARS, the National Treasury.
Charles Makola, Director, International Tax, National Treasury.
Ashna Maraj, SARS, Manager of International Development and Treaties.
Lutanda Mbowa, Deputy Director, Tax Police, International Tax, National Treasury.
And now we know who's who. Welcome to everyone. All the members, we will do dealing with two protocols between the Republic of South Africa and Ireland and the Republic of South Africa and Sweden, which is very important relating to tax issues, but also in terms of our international trade relations, etc. It was quite interesting to work through this. I went through other documentation because the same exercise was done with the Standing Committee on Finance and the NA. And I went into their work as well to get some better background. But without any waste of time, we'll give over to Treasury to start your briefing. Which one will be doing first? One on Ireland?
We'll be doing Ireland first.
Yeah. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Before a tax treaty or a tax treaty protocol can come into effect, it has to be ratified by Parliament. And ratification can only take place after signing of a tax treaty. And in South Africa, the process is done in terms of Section 231 of the Constitution, read with Section 108 of the Income Tax Act. The tax treaty protocols presented today before the committee constitute what we believe to be in the best interest of South Africa. The renegotiation of the two tax treaty protocols became necessary because we are converting from secondary tax on companies to a withholding tax on dividends. And all the tax treaties that had a zero withholding tax on dividends had to be renegotiated as a result. These treaties included a tax treaty with Australia, with Cyprus, with Ireland, with Malta, with Netherlands, Oman, Seychelles, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. The renegotiation also addressed some of the aspects that are not present in the old tax treaties. The South Africa-Ireland Tax Treaty Protocol was signed on 17 March 2010. The South Africa-Sweden Tax Treaty Protocol was signed on 7 July 2010. Now, going to South Africa-Ireland Tax Treaty, we look at general investment flows. For years 2005 to 2008, the total investment by Ireland into South Africa in 2005 were 1.5 billion, in 2006 were 1.9 billion, in 2007 were 2.4 billion, and 1.9 billion in 2008. Some of the Irish companies or representative offices operating in South Africa include Independent News, and Media, Guinness, Spectrac Group, the Howard Holdings, and the ESP International. investments by South Africa into Ireland were 33.4 billion in 2005, in 2006 were 45.4 billion, in 2007 were 51.4 billion, and in 2008 were 44.6 billion. Some of our major companies operating in Ireland include the AECI Ltd, Alexco, Anglo Platinum, Coronation, Dimension Data, Datatech, Sasol, Investec, Old Mutual, SAB Miller, SAPI Ltd, and others. We also looked at the South Africa-Ireland dividend flows, that is, dividend from South Africa to Ireland. For 2007, the total dividend flows were 3.3 million, and potential tax at 5% would be 166,000, and potential tax at 10% would be 333,000. That is based, the potential tax based on the rates that we have in the protocol, which my colleague from SARS would take you through. In 2008, the total outward dividends were 462 million. Potential tax at 5% would be 23 million, and at 10% would be 46.2 million. In 2009, the total outward dividends were 171 million. At potential tax at 5% would be 8.5 million, and at 10% would be 17.1 million. The total dividends flows for 2007 to 2009, 31 December, was 637.5 million. And potential tax at 5% would be 31.8 million, at 10% would be 63.7 million. And we also looked at the trade flows between the two countries from 2005 to 2009. I must point out, Chairperson, that trade flows do not have any impact on tax treaty, but they merely indicate the presence of economic activities between the two countries. The exports from South Africa to Ireland in 2005 were 1.1 billion. Again, in 2006 were 1.1 billion. In 2007 were 1.3 billion. In 2008, 1.7 billion. And in 2009, were again 1.1 million. And our main exports were base metals, machinery, mechanical and electrical appliances, base metals, mineral products, etc. And imports from Ireland to South Africa in 2005 were 4 billion, 4.3 billion in 2006, 5.6 billion in 2007, 7.1 billion in 2008, and in 2009 were 4.4 billion. And our main imports were works of art, collector's pieces, antiques, vegetables, live animals, wood, natural and cultured pelts, raw hides, wines, leather and fur skins, umbrellas, and other products. Coming into South Africa, Sweden, the general investment flows for 2005 to 2008. In 2005, the total investment was 3.1 billion. In 2006, was 3.8 billion. In 2007, was 3.5 billion. And again, in 2008, they were 3.5 billion. Some of the Swedish companies or their representative offices in South Africa include Atlas Copco, Electrolux, Ericsson, Volvo, the Scania Group, Svetlana Group, Tetra Pak, and Sandvik. Investments by South Africa into Sweden in 2005 were 991 million, 1.4 billion in 2006, in 2007 were 1.3 billion, and in 2008 were 536 million. Some of the South African companies operating in Sweden include Dimension Data, Tiger Wheels, SAPI, and others. We also looked at the dividend flows, particularly outward dividends to Sweden. And for 2007, the total dividend flows were 371.9 million, and the potential tax at 5% were 18.5 million, at 15% were 55.7 million. For 2008, the total outward dividends were 325 million. Potential tax at 5% was 16.2 million, and at 15% were 48.8 million. For 2009, dividend flows were 571.3 million. Potential tax at 5% would be 28.5 million. And at 15% would be 85.7 million. The dividends, the total dividends from 2007 to 31 December 2009 was 1.2 billion, and potential tax at 5% would be 63.4 million. At 15% would be 190 million. And again, we looked at the imports and exports between the two countries, and exports in 2005 were 1.5 billion, 2.9 billion in 2006, 2.9 billion in 2007, 3.4 billion in 2008, and in 2009 with 2.7 billion. And the main exports were wine of fresh grapes, citrus and dried fruit, safety fuses, grapes, machinery, aluminium waste and scrap metals, and other products. The imports from Sweden in 2005 were 4.8 billion, 5.8 billion in 2006, 8.1 billion in 2007, 10 billion in 2008, and in 2009 with 9.4 billion. And the main imports included motor cars, forklifts, trucks, paper and paperboard, plates, dishwashing machines, generators, etc. Thank you, Chairperson. That's the end of our presentation.
Thank you for your input on that. That's the whole presentation.
That's the whole National Treasury presentation, Chairperson. I will hand over to my colleague from SARS.
Harris, welcome. I know you're under pressure. I'm trying to finish this meeting as soon as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. This is the presentation for the South African Revenue Services in relation to the two protocols for formal ratification. In relation to the South Africa-Ireland Protocol amending the Double Taxation Convention between South Africa and Ireland, the amendments to the convention became necessary in view of the proposed phasing out of the secondary tax on companies and its replacement with a dividend tax. The articles of interest in the South African-Ireland Protocol are as follows. Article 4 on residence, the definition of resident has been updated, and a common contractual fund in Ireland is excluded from this definition as it is physically transparent and therefore not an entity for tax purposes. Article 10 on dividends, the dividend rate in the South Africa-Ireland Protocol is 5% for a sharing of at least 10% and 10% on all other cases. And Article 26 on exchange of information. Article 26 of the convention was deleted and replaced by the new article on exchange of information. This new article is in line with the OECD model. This article ensures that bank secrecy or the absence of domestic tax interest can no longer be used to deny a request for exchange of information. Moving on to the South Africa-Sweden Protocol amending the Double Taxation Convention, between South Africa and Sweden. Again, the amendments to the convention became necessary in view of the proposed phasing out of the secondary tax on companies and its replacement with a dividends tax. And the articles of interest in this protocol is Article 10 on dividends. The dividends rate in the South Africa-Sweden protocol is now 5% for a shareholding of at least 10% and 15% for all other cases. And thank you. That's the end of SAR's presentation on the treaty.
Yeah. That's okay. Thank you very much. Honourable members, there you have it. When I looked at the documentation that I retrieved, questions that have been asked by members in the NA. But now looking at the figures in front of us, on page 2 of your presentation, the protocol of Ireland and Sweden, that Ireland is, that South Africa is investing more in Ireland than Ireland is investing in South Africa. Now, the question that comes up to me is in terms of the creation of jobs. On page 2 of this presentation, that slide at the bottom. You see, you must read the figures, read what is, and then what's happening actually in reality. Going to Sweden, it's quite interesting to see that we export fish. Sweden, well, while our own fish resources is declining, that's also a reality. Because I attended a meeting of fisheries, and that was information that was given to the committee. It's quite interesting to look at that. Honourable members, questions? Let me take your hands. Honourable Mashile, Honourable Elise. You had a question? Charney? What about Charney? In that order, you may proceed.
No, Chair, I just wanted to say on slide number 2 on the main presentation, and then there is reference to section 108, subsection 2 of the Income Tax Act. What does that read? Is there anybody that have that particular section now?
Yes.
And briefly, what is that talking about? Thanks, Chair.
Chairman, the slides, the same page you were looking at, page 2, slide 4 of the first presentation.
Yes.
South African companies operating in Ireland include, amongst others, Alex Corp. Now, I was in a meeting with Alex Corp, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of the Board, yesterday. And when we asked about this investment in Ireland by Alex Corp, they denied that there was any such investment. And so I'm intrigued to see it come up here in this presentation. They were absolutely adamant that Alex Corp has no investments in Ireland. So I think there's a problem here with information. I hope that then doesn't translate into problems with figures. As if there's a problem with who's investing in Ireland, is there a problem with the figures given to us? Mr. Chairman, then the whole thing here we're talking about really is the protocol, and the essence of that has to be changed is with regard to STC and dividends tax. I think that's really what this whole thing is about. That's the reason for the protocol being changed. Now, we're phasing out STC, but we haven't yet started introducing dividends tax in the hands of the receiver, as far as I know. In other words, if I receive a dividend now, it's still tax-free in my hands. But STC has been reduced from 15% to 10%. What I'm wondering is that this is a phased-in process in our tax regime, South Africa, but we're changing a protocol to read certain specific percentages as of whenever it becomes law, a process I'm not 100% sure of. Can that phasing in versus implementation of the protocol be explained to me how that's going to work? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Lees. You make a very important point also on the issue of Alex Corp. I want you to forward to this committee. What is the actual investment by Alex Corp? What is it that we know? Because Alex Corp is appearing before committees in Parliament for the past 3-4 weeks now. And they've got serious problems. Alex Corp is mining on the west coast of South Africa in Namakwa at Alexander Bay. And that's part of my region where I'm also deployed. So if you could forward that information, Honourable Chum.
No, thanks, Chair. I think Honourable Lees has covered me with the last question raised. I'm just also interested to know, how does these protocols operate? Do they come into effect upon ratification, or they operate on the date of signing once they are ratified? And why do you have to take 3 months to bring them to Parliament after signing?
We import from Ireland also vegetable products, leather, raw hides and skins, wood and charcoal. Now, that are commodities that we can make use of to create jobs here. A simple example, I don't know what you call it in English, it's these trees that you get in the rivers that can be used to make charcoal. It's taking over the riverbeds where the river is actually dry. That's it. But we are importing charcoal from Ireland. It doesn't make sense. Importing wood, we've got Mpumalanga in the Eastern Cape, Plettenberg Bay, Humansdorp. But we're importing wood. Can you give us the bigger picture? Except for what you put down here on paper, please.
Thank you, Chair. I will just highlight or try to answer some of the questions, and my colleagues can come in and add on that. But first, before I do that, let me just explain the effect of these provisions, as you'll know, or the effect of treaties in general. They shift the tax base. They basically redetermine the tax base. Like, we will define our tax base in respect of dividends and say dividends will be calculated like this, or they will be calculated on this amount. Tax treaties general then will redetermine that. And they also serve as some form of fiscal stability agreement, in a sense that they freeze the rate. So even if we had a 30% rate, treaty will now tell you that you have a 15% rate, and then that's the rate that will be applicable in relation to dividend flows between those countries. So that's generally the effect of treaties, and in particular the provision relating to dividends, interest, and other portfolio investments. Now, having said that, coming to section 108, honourable members, 108 simply tells us that a treaty, once it comes into effect, it becomes part of our law. Now, the tax code or the tax law is contained in this little book, and once the treaty comes into effect, it becomes part of this, so that when we read this book, or when SARS try to enforce this book, they have to also consider that treaty. So it's binding on the country, as if it is like the Income Tax Act itself. And you'll remember, for instance, the changes to the Income Tax Act were presented to Parliament a few days ago by the Minister. And then coming then to the implementation process of the protocols and the STC and the dividend tax phasing out. The dividend tax couldn't come into effect until such time that we have this protocol. The reason simply being that had you done that, what you'll have dividend flows going out at a zero rate in some of these protocols. So we had to find a way that we can preserve our taxing rights over those outflows, because people would merely rechannel the funds through those particular countries that have zero rates. So we wouldn't have got money. And as you'll know, currently, although you receive dividends tax-free, they're not necessarily tax-free. There's FTC that's actually levied at the company level. So they are indeed taxed. So now we're just moving the incidence of tax. We're just moving it from the company to the individual. Going forward, we'll be taxing the individual and no longer the company. But we need to protect ourselves. So these are a kind of defensive mechanism. Otherwise, we'll not be able to raise revenue out of the new dividends tax. So once we have done that, then we can see some movement as to the new dividends tax. And there's been extensive consultation as well, you know, on the new dividends tax, just to see what industry wants and some of the problems. So we've been cleaning up the legislation a bit. And once this process is done, which hopefully, you know, I can't commit to particular dates, but hopefully in a year or two or so, we can see some movements from STC to dividends tax. Obviously, also one considers the risk. When you move the tax incidence, there's always a risk that you can start losing revenue, you know. So one needs to assess that and be sure that you're doing the right thing. And that this has been tested for a couple of years, and we have consulted extensively, and everyone is comfortable that it is going to work, and it will probably keep us in the same position that the FCC has actually, in terms of revenue generation, we will still be in the same position. Now, coming to Alexco, the investments around the world happen in various forms. If I need to raise funding or I need to provide funding to particular, let's say the United States company needs to invest in South Africa, there's many ways it can do that. It can come to South Africa and just put in 1 billion rand, or it can go to Mauritius, for instance, put 1 billion rand there, and Mauritius bring it back in South Africa. And it's often difficult to assess in an international space what is actually happening there. So you can pick up an investment that is made in a particular country, only to find out that investment was actually a pass through. The investment only passed through a particular country, but you'll never be able to know, as a matter of fact, where that investment ended up. The same goes with South African companies investing overseas and foreign companies investing in South Africa. It's difficult for anyone to actually assess. The figures or what you see in the statements or everywhere, or in the books, the research that we do on our side, can tell us that an investment went into a particular country. But for various reasons, maybe for legal reasons, maybe for tax reasons, maybe for whatever reason, they may have decided to channel the investment via a particular country. And that is happening globally, and it's unfortunately the reality that we're dealing with. Sometimes it's done for valid reasons, sometimes not done for valid reasons. So in this particular instance, when we did our research of the history, we picked up the Alasco investment. However, we cannot, as a matter of precision, say to you that Alasco invested in this particular country, or the investment was routed via that particular country. So I'm just raising that as a possibility. And the period it took to bring the protocols to the committees, I think I might not be able to speak with authority on that one. I'm 9 months, I think, in the National Treasury, and my colleague here has been there for a while, and he knows better as to the process there. But what I would like to highlight there is that sometimes you have to arrange for the signature, so meaning you must get the two, you know, you must get either the representative from the other side and the representative from our side, being the minister. You must get their diaries, you must get the same date, which can take pretty long to get a matching date so the two can meet and sign the particular protocol. That is just one issue. But my colleague, I'm sure, would like to add as to what really happened with these particular ones on that particular issue.
Okay. Well, on this point,
thank you.
It was first signed and then came to Parliament. We would think it must be the other way around.
You want to comment on that?
No, Chair, just to ratify the issue, it has to be signed first before it can be ratified by Parliament. It has to be signed by the ministers of both countries, then it will come to Parliament for ratification. And just to add on, there was a question on what exactly Section 102, subsection 108, subsection 2 says. I'll read it verbatim. It says, as soon as maybe after the approval by Parliament of any such agreement as contemplated in Section 231 of the Constitution, the arrangements thereby made shall be notified by publication in Gazette, and the arrangements so notified shall thereupon have effect as if enacted in this Act. In other words, any treaty that we negotiate or we sign tends to come to Parliament for approval before it can become effective. And again, the process is we once our Parliament ratifies, we notify the other contracting state, and they also have to ratify before it can come into operation. It doesn't come into operation immediately after ratification or immediately after signature. On the question regarding the investment flow, why do we have more investments into Ireland than in South Africa? That may be explained by two issues. We have most of the companies investing or having offices in Ireland. The reason, as explained by my colleague, may be that those investments are not destined for Ireland, but they are destined for other countries, but using Ireland as a conduit because of the lower tax rate in Ireland and the fact that they don't have any withholding tax rate. By way of example, we have a corporate tax rate of 28% in South Africa, and Ireland is a corporate tax rate of 12.5%. And the information that we rely on the figures, we get the information from the Reserve Bank. This is an example of a book that the Reserve Bank compiled. For some of the investments, before they can go overseas, they have to be approved by the Reserve Bank. And I'm happy to leave the committee with the copy of this book, just to look at some of the examples of investment into these countries. Thank you, Chair.
This committee will be visiting the Reserve Bank on the 15th to the 17th. So we will be workshopped on all these issues. On Belize, were your questions answered about the tax? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, the question involving the STC and the dividends tax, I understand. But from my point of view as a receiver of dividends, I don't have to pay any tax. I understand the tax has been taxed prior to that, and that's switching the other way around. Can you explain to me the 5% for shareholding of at least 10%? The percentages are a little confusing to me. I'm not really understanding what they really mean on both the Swedish and the Irish one. Dividend rates in South Africa, Sweden protocol, 5% for shareholding of at least 10%.
Yes.
So 5% tax.
If you hold 10%.
If you hold?
At least 10%.
Of what?
Of the equity share capital in the particular company.
And if you hold less than 10%?
You will fall into the
15%. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, this is a one-on-one, and it shouldn't be like that, but it's my fault. No, it's my fault. I engaged in it, Mr. Chairman. Please don't blame Treasury. They're helping me. Mr. Chairman, so my question's answered. I take the answer about Alex Corp, so it becomes now an issue between us and Alex Corp, not with National Treasury. They've given us the source of the information. And even if it was a conduit, I would have assumed that Ethics Corps would know that they used Ireland as a conduit, and they would have explained that to us. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. If my questions are answered.
I actually just wanted to know whether the other parties, whether they have already gone through this exercise, or are we the first to do it, to ratify this protocol, or whether the other countries have already ratified those protocols.
Any other follow-ups? None?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. No, Ireland hasn't ratified it yet. We haven't received a notice through the diplomatic channels, and neither has Sweden. We've just signed the agreement, and now we've brought the agreement to the National Assembly on the 4th of August for formal ratification at the first house, and then we brought it to the National Council of Provinces, second house. Once we've done this process, we will send a notice through the diplomatic channels advising that we've ratified the agreement. But Ireland and Sweden haven't yet ratified because they haven't sent us a notice through the diplomatic channels. So that's how we know they haven't yet ratified the agreement. They would, of course, be in the process of ratifying the agreement as we are currently ratifying the agreement as well through the two houses of parliament. Okay.
Yeah, I'm asking a totally administrative question, Chair. If we ratify this protocol, what Section 108 is saying is that automatically it becomes part of our legislation.
Yeah.
But the implementation of it will wait until the other party does exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Now the question is there any provision of recourse if the other party doesn't come into the party for us to deactivate this particular protocol? And after how many days or weeks or months or years that if the other party doesn't do that, then we have to remove this thing because it is no law, it will be a dormant piece of legislation in our tax laws.
Adding to that, now formulate my get my wording right. How do you monitor the process outside? What we are doing here, are you monitoring that the same is happening there, like what we are doing today in the committee? Is there a monitoring tool?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. In relation to that question, in terms of monitoring, once we've sent a note for BAL, we have lots of communications through the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, where our bilateral agreements are discussed. And what we do is we have follow-ups with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation in terms of what is the status of our agreements. And normally through the embassies or high commissions, we will notify them that we have ratified on our side, and we're waiting for the notice from their side that they've ratified the agreement. The agreement will only enter into force on receipt of the latter notification. So if Sweden and Ireland give us the notifications through the diplomatic channels second, it will enter into force on receipt of those notifications. So the agreement becomes operational then. But the only way that we have to monitor it is to liaise with the embassy's high commissions and with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, because we have lots of discussions there. Have I answered? Or did I?
Not yet.
Okay. Yes. Your question was about... Oh, yes, the termination. With regard to some of the agreements, like we've waited a long time for our counterparts to ratify the agreement in their country. We just recently, with one of our treaties with Rwanda, which now come into force, it took some years before the agreement was ratified in Rwanda. They've now sent us the notice. The agreement has now entered into force. It all depends on that government. So we send our notification. We do the follow-ups to ask what's happening on the other side to ensure that ratification is taking place in their country. And yes, sometimes we do wait a long time, and sometimes we don't, and it can be very quick. But it all depends on the country's parliament and the political situation. So, but in terms of once the agreement enters into force, yes, there is a provision to terminate the agreement, usually after a period of 5 years.
I'm not No, Chair, you see, what I'm trying to ask is, today we ratify, in terms of South African laws, this becomes part of our law. But then we can't implement. And when we deal with these taxes with this particular country, we are still going to deal with those taxes as if this protocol doesn't exist, until the other side actually ratifies. Now, if that takes 3 years, 5 years, and then we'll be locked in the previous arrangement, as if this law doesn't exist. But in terms of our law, our laws, it is now part of our law, the new protocol. So that's exactly where I've got a problem, that whether are we having any provisions that of recourse that we can resort to if we ratify and we make it part of our laws, but because the other side have not done it, they are delaying to do it, then we can have recourse to actually undo this particular piece of legislation, because it is actually useless and dormant. It tells us that maybe you can have 5% of whoever is having a 10% shareholding, but you can't implement it until the other side ratify it. And that's where I'm having a problem, is that for how long can you stay when the other agreement party is not ratified? That's my question. Now, another one, Chair, is a difficult question, I know, but I just need an honest answer. Who is the driver of these protocols? Because it can't be the two countries, it's one of them. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll try to answer that question. What happens is with the two countries, I'll start with the last question as to who is the driver. In this case, in the case of these two protocols, South Africa is the driver of their treaties. The reason is that we had secondary tax on companies, which I've explained before, it was levied in the hands of a company. Now, as South Africa was one of the only two countries in the world that had this kind of tax, we decided to abandon it and replace it with dividend withholding tax, which applies internationally. But the problem is we had the some of the tax treaties which are mentioned in my presentation, which had a zero rate on dividends. In other words, we're going to lose a lot of revenue if we left them as they were. So we initiated the negotiation of these protocols. Not Ireland, not Sweden, not Australia, but us. With regards to the termination, once this committee approves or ratifies these protocols, they will not immediately come into force until Ireland or Sweden ratifies it. In other words, there will just be protocols that are awaiting final ratification by both parliaments. And in terms of Section 108, once Ireland ratifies, they will notify us through the Department of International Relations, and then we can decide on the effective date of the protocols. But again, we also have a recourse in our treaties. We have an article called termination article, which says each state or any of the two states may, after 5 years, notify the other state through diplomatic channels of the termination of the agreement.
Okay, that's a question.
Yeah.
No, the question that the honourable member is saying, perhaps in the simple terms, because now you are amending the existing protocols. In the main one, the one that you signed the first time, is there no provisions that says between the two countries, once the ministers have signed, Parliament A should take so much time to ratify and Parliament B? Or is it left open, they can sign after 10 years? Then if they sign after 10 years, that is a concern, is heavy, that we are quick because we want to amend and improve, sign, but then its effectiveness lies squarely in the hands of the other country. So that is, if there's nothing regulating that, essentially what we are saying is that you must take it back to your principles. That is the area that they need to find a way of fixing with the other countries as we determine these relationships.
Just hold your word on Belize.
You might not be able to answer it now.
But it's a question, honourable members, that we can pose to the minister.
Mr. Chairman, I think I get a slightly different understanding. Sorry, I don't know what's hanging in front of my speaker. From the question, you see, that section of the Act 108, is it? It says that once the protocol has been ratified by Parliament, it becomes part of, as if it were part of the Act. And so if one thinks logically of law, then it's applicable once it's part of the law. Is there a provision in 108 to say that, yes, it becomes part of the Act, but only implemented once it's been ratified by the other party? But if that is not there, then you know, if I'm one of those taxpayers involved in cross-border transactions, I could start playing games now and saying, no, I want this implemented, or I don't want, you know, depending on which way I'm looking at it, which way I'm transacting, I could play games. But I think the simple answer would be, if that section 108 said, yes, it becomes law, but is only implemented on date of ratification by the third party, then there's no problem. But if it's law, then it's law. No matter what the other party does, it's now law. Now, and as if it's challenged in the courts here, that's the law that has to apply, because that's the way I understood the question.
Again, I'll take you through subsection 2. It says it has to be published in the Government Gazette. Now, we don't do that before we get notification from the other party, and therefore it's not enforced and cannot be used by the other party. I'll try again to answer the question on the termination. It's difficult to prescribe on the other country what their process should be. An example is a treaty with Nigeria. It took about 7 years to be ratified by Nigeria because of their own domestic processes. And again, with Switzerland, we had an experience with them. They have 22 cantons, which I assume are the equivalent of our provinces. And in terms of their domestic law, each canton has to ratify the protocol before it becomes effective. Now, we don't have any other measure internationally to force the other country to ratify.
Yeah. Now, Chairperson, I think I take your advice that it may be beyond these officials, and it looks like we have to influence what they use to actually get into these protocols. Because that is the law that needs to be looked at. Because my belief is that whatever country that tries to enter into an agreement with another country is because there is substance or there are issues to be dealt with. Therefore, if one country does it now and another one comes and do the thing 5 years down the line, when it is no longer important for the driving country, it actually becomes a useless treaty. So I think we have to take it on another level to see how do we ensure that things happen in real time. Thank you.
You're right. Your governor? Yes, sir.
Okay. Honourable Member, you're absolutely right. I need to say that when the other country is not cooperating, obviously things will move to the minister's level. When he meets his counterpart on the other side, he can try to put pressure. DERCO can also, through diplomatic channels, can then try to say where are you standing. So it's indeed at the highest level.
Thank you. Any other questions? Welcome to honorable Mashushiwe. We are just entering to take the vote. We appreciate the presence. Thank you for being present at this meeting. Honourable members, we heard the presentation. We raised our questions and concerns. I'm going to put it now to the committee. to propose that we approve the said protocols with your approval. I'll read the following: that the Select Committee on Finance on the Protocol amending the Convention between the Republic of South Africa and the Government of Ireland, dated the 1st of September 2010, or that's the start of spring, the Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by the Parliament of the Protocol amending the Convention between the Republic of South Africa and the Government of Ireland for the avoidance of the double taxation and prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income and capital gains, this protocol recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approves the said protocol. Report to be considered. Agreed? Thank you so much. I sign it. The second one is between South Africa and Sweden. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Protocol amending the Convention between the Republic of South Africa and the Kingdom of Sweden for the avoidance of the double taxation and prevention of the fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said protocol. Report to be considered. Agreed?
Chairperson.
Honorable.
Yes, I'm seeing the paper that you are signing doesn't even have a coat of arms or whatever. Is it orderly?
I'll take it back to the administration.
Okay.
I'm also worrying about that one. In terms of Sweden, referring to Sweden, it's nothing to do with now, but Sweden played a huge important role.
Oh, in 1994, especially in the Northern Cape. Referring to local government and the establishment of the municipalities, etc., after that. So Sweden had a huge input in the Northern Cape, also in education, outreaches, and there's a twin agreement between Kimberley, Borlanga, and Farland that is still standing. So we've got ties with that country. Honourable members, there's no other business. Next week is the provincial week, and we are out. And the week after that, we're coming back. We meet again on the 14th of September, and that afternoon, late afternoon, leave for the oversight to the Reserve Bank until the Friday. We received the names of those members that will be part of that. That's been forwarded to our colleagues and the coordinators in the NA as well. You will get the traveling arrangements, etc., be forwarded to you. That brings us to the end of this meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.